And welcome back. Hey, John, how are you?
Hey, I'm feeling a little ranty.
You feeling a little weighed down by knowledge?
Yeah, there's a lot to absorb in here. I am a moist sponge. I am sponge worthy.
And moist. Yeah. One of my favorite words you use in description of yourself.
Yeah, it's moist and flaky.
Yeah, I also like welcoming, ready. Those are some of the favorite John words.
Ah, yes. Let's jump right into the moist, welcoming chasm of Cinnabar's mouth.
So, this book's pretty well known. I've read multiple reviews of it on the internet. Something Awful did a big review of it. I've seen a few other people's podcasts where they try and encapsulate it. There's a lot to unpack. I feel like even though I've read multiple reviews of this book, I'm safe going in.
Yeah, there's
layers.
We had talked about making this a two-parter for a while because there's so much stuff in here, there's no possible way you would be able to go over everything.
So I figure we just start talking, and if at an hour we're not done yet, we'll just cut it off and do another one. Does that work for you?
Yeah, sure.
All right. And yeah, I feel like the best way to talk about this book is let's briefly go over what it is, what the rules are, and then we can really get into the weird individual elements, because let's go right off the bat. I want to say I feel like this book is written by someone who didn't stop writing this book until they were done. Like they started on thousands or millions of years ago, and they ended at the end index. That's when they finally stopped.
Yeah, it is one of those things where you're like, if at any point in time the person writing this had stopped and looked at what they had done, they would have been so horrified as to never pick it up again.
I feel like the longest pause they were allowed to take while typing was to reach over and get more cocaine.
Yeah, and given the various pictures of Raven C.S. McCracken I have seen, I'll believe it.
Yeah. There was probably a point where he stopped typing with one hand so we could grab a handful of Dexedrine. But otherwise, no, it was just typing for, like a week?
Yeah.
It's like a vision quest of a book.
And it's, the other wonderful thing is I look at this and we've reviewed some various other, vanity project, completely done by one person books. But this one, it was created by Raven C.S. McCracken, but also written with Bryce Thelen, which means he had to infect someone else with his level of crazy in order to do this book.
Well, that kind of, it's one of those books that reads like an 80s, it's like a riffs book, really. It's just 80s power metal excess, the book, and it's not that hard to infect someone with that. I mean, really, the other guy should have been like, wait, these rules are insane, those rules don't make sense. But okay, but anyway, enough broad
no way, man.
You want to keep talking broadly?
This book has a fucking power mullet. It is amazing how wonderful this book is.
It's got power mullets in it. There's more than one picture of a giant power mullet guy straight out of a 14-year-old's binder.
Oh, yeah. There is definitely a giant with an axe with a power mullet, and he is doing crazy awesome things.
Yeah, and he's three pages after the Amazon, who appears to be mostly camel toe, with about 8 pounds of Viking helmet on top.
Also, some great underboob.
Yeah, some wicked 80s style underboob. That's like, you draw that after you just saw an AC/DC video.
It's like he had heard someone complaining about like, oh man, boob armor on women is never effective, and he's like, let me show you how ineffective armor can be. I will put a chainmail shirt dish thing?
It's the first drawing someone did after they heard of the pencil test.
Yeah, it is fantastic.
Okay, so this is a game set on Mars, except...
No, it's set on Cinnabar.
Okay, so Cinnabar is a Dyson Sphere-style planet made out of Mars that is orbiting a planet called Shalom. Oh no, a sun called Shalom.
It was made by Jesus.
His name is Aridius. He's the god of hope and command. He used to be a mage. Now he's god of hope and command.
And his avatar is what made Cinnabar, and I'm assuming his avatar is Jesus.
Yeah,
it doesn't say specifically, but I'm basically reading between the lines.
He does do a lot of Jesus-style sleeping, so yeah, I guess I could see that. So basically, the story is that Aridius sent some avatar of himself to Earth, to observe people who didn't have a real god so that they could have a nice god to worship. And they started worshiping him. And then a big fight broke out between some other gods. And if you go back one episode of the podcast, you'll see me going over this backstory in detail. So I'm gonna deeply summarize. There were some other gods that had a fight, and that broke God's power structure. So demigods had to take over, and they were terrible, so they created a huge storm that was going to destroy the universe. So Aridius tried to help fix it by making it, or had his avatar try to help fix it by taking Mars and hollowing it out and moving a bunch of people onto it. And then he was going to send it out of the way of a giant storm, but then a bunch of stuff happened, and he created a bunch of adventurer classes, and almost everyone died. And then he slept for 30,000 years, and then he slept for 12,000 years, and then he slept for 3 days, and then he slept for 10,000 years. And then the planet made it, and there's aliens and Dark Lords and Hydras and all kinds of things all over it.
Yeah, and no explanation for where it comes from, which is my favorite thing when it's just, Jesus took Mars and turned it into a spaceship and teleported everyone onto it and then sent it over to a different planet. You're like, all right, I'm bored, whatever, sure. I'm basically reading a crazy person's version of Dianetics, but I'm fine with that. But then it's like, and then we had a dark age and most of the records were lost. Thankfully, the dwarves still had theirs. And you're like, where did the dwarves come from? What the fuck are you talking about?
Well, it took 50,000 years for the planet to travel through radiation-y, messed-up space at half speed to get to Shalom. So, presumably, people evolved a bunch during that time to deal with the fact that they now lived on Crazy Planet.
Yeah, I mean, I think, technically, the book wants you to think that when he created the adventuring classes, those classes included, like, the dwarf and the giant and so on.
Yeah, there's also the Atlantean or Aquarian or whatever they're called.
Aquarian, yeah, which is just Aquaman.
Oh, yeah, that's... We'll get into that in a second, but basically you can drill down all of the things in this to a member of the Justice League.
So, yeah, when you made all of those, I go, all right, well, that's fine. But then it also says that after the horrible events of, like, the engine of Mars almost exploding, you had 1,500 people, and then they repopulated back up to, like, 6 billion, and
actually, if you look at the timeline, now, all I read when I did that reading was the opening introductory chapter. The thing that follows it is this big, complex timeline, and the timeline includes population levels at particular moments. So it'll say, like, this year there were 6 billion people. Next year there were 40,000. Next year there were 250 billion. Next year there were 11 million.
Yeah.
Next year there were 7. Next year it just goes on like that.
It's the weirdest thing where it just keeps having, like, the population booms way faster than you would ever actually have a planet's population boom. And then everyone dies. And then it happens again. And then everyone dies. And you're like, everyone on this planet is so inbred. It is just dumb.
But don't worry about whether or not there's purebred Native Americans.
Because boy howdy, are they their entire own class.
Yeah, there's a whole class of Native Americans.
So, getting into making your own character, probably the first thing I see when I'm going in here and I skip past all of the stupid bullshit intro, which I always do for every book because I'm a horrible person.
Not me.
Is I go straight to the character creation, and what's table one? It's their character creation generation outline. Mm-hmm. What do you need to do to make a character? Why, just follow these simple, easy 22 steps.
Hey, let's go through them.
All right, so we're going to do 1 through 22 of generate basic initial characteristic scores. Choose a method of character generation between 4 different generation methods.
Yeah, you can basically roll or not roll or choose an array or not follow a thing.
Oh, you can... No, it's... You
oh,
can
no,
make
I,
a
I
character
remember now.
Class or you can make up your own or just pick one out of the back of the book.
Or make a... Or play as one of the monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then you assign all your scores. You gotta roll to see if you get random mutations or psionics like you do in Rifts.
Yep, it's very palladium-y.
You gotta determine what your skills and special abilities are.
Mm-hmm.
Then you determine attacks. You determine attack segments.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get your advantage bonus, shot bonus, a whole bunch of shit. Just keeps going on and on forever and ever and ever.
What's the last one? What's the very last one?
Purchase provisions and equipment.
Oh, good. Well, that's nothing too crazy. Alright, so stat rolling in this game is D20s.
Yep.
And D20s alone. You roll a D20 and you assign it to a stat.
And the D20s, you have to roll above an 8 for your stat.
Right, I remember
so
this now.
So if you roll a 1 through... No, it's 8 or above. So if you roll a 1 through 7, you have to re-roll the D20.
Mm-hmm.
So you're mostly trying to get a decently high one. You're going to roll 7, drop the lowest, and then roll 2 more that are above whatever the lowest one you dropped was. So if I roll 7 and the lowest one I had was a what, like a 10 that okay, I have yeah, to get an 11 or above for my next rolls?
Uh-huh. You roll two more dice until, or you keep rolling dice until you get an 11 or higher, two 11s or higher, and then you can replace your two lowest stats with those stats.
Yeah.
And, I want you to know I'm making the face from the aliens guy meme right now. Cause that's, why would you, why, you could just do a bell curve. You don't need to roll 7d20 to generate five stats and, I don't know. Oh, and at this point, once you've rolled your stats, you get to check to see if you get to be any of the cool alien races.
Yeah. There is stat requirements for all but maybe like five out of the 20 races you could be.
Now that, keep in mind that races we're saying as a separate thing from the adventurer classes. Some of the adventurer classes are obviously races, like dwarves and psi elves, but there are also a list of 20 or so, like monstery things you can be,
yeah,
including tree lots and no, wait, yeah,
you could be a tree demon or a giant air elemental or a mutant lizoid.
Yeah, some of them make perfect sense when you're reading through there. You got your boglodyte.
Yeah, you know your
bioglodyte. Sorry,
armored mantis.
Right.
So your typical adventurer
now. You think, okay, great. Well, what is that? How do you know what those are? Is there a little section at the front with those 20? Like just a paragraph of information, maybe a picture of them, something like that. So you know when you roll and you want to be a bioglodyte that you know what that is. Is that there? Is that there, John?
No.
Well, what do you get instead?
Nothing. You get nothing.
You get their names listed on
good
the table.
Good day, sir.
Okay. So to get those, you have to get certain stat requirements on your D20s. This is also true of the character classes.
Yeah. There are 5 out of 20 that you can just be regardless of what you rolled. Everything else has a minimum requirement. Some are fairly easy. Like if I want to be a shadow master, mm-hmm. I need to have rolled a 16 and a 13 at least for two of my stats. All right.
Yeah.
That, considering I'm re-rolling anything below an 8, that's fairly likely to happen. Sure. Then you have ones like, let's say, I want to be a psi elf. Because mm-hmm. I want to be a psychic elf. Because that sounds great to
it's
me.
It's also the only kind of elf.
Yeah. There is no non-psychic elf. All elves are psychic.
All elves are psi elves.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't just call them elves in that case, but whatever. Maybe the regular elves died out during the great plague of everyone getting stupider.
If you want to be a Psy Elf, for your stats, you had to roll at least a 20, a 19, another 19, and an 18.
Oh, so out of your 6 stats, you needed to have 4 of them above 18?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's probably the worst of the generic character classes. If you flip over to the race ones, you'll see the Panther Men, which require you... Now, the way that they do the variant races is instead of giving you just those 20s you have, or numbers you have to roll on D20s, they give you something called your skill points. You get your skill points by taking all of the stat scores you have, totaling them, and then multiplying that by 2. Now, this is interesting because a lot of them have requirements that are things like skill points required, 165. Why isn't that 170? Since you can't get 165 by multiplying a even number or a whole number by 2, it doesn't matter. It should just be 170. But Panther Men have a requirement of 235, which means you need to roll...
5 20s?
Yes.
Yeah.
You need to roll almost entirely 20s and a 19.
Yeah, a fiend or a panther man, both of them are, I hope you rolled 5 20s if you want to be just, you know, a big panther dude.
They're not that special.
And they aren't even that good. You probably don't want to be a panther man, but for some reason, you gotta have that.
Just a quick aside, if you want to be a furry, basically, is what it is. You gotta earn your fun in this game. If you want to play as a cool cat dude.
Yeah, man. So,
it says here you do get a tank top and dog tags. That's awesome. Oh, and if you roll all 20s, then you can play as like
an immortal born,
which means you get to start the game as a super cool god.
Except you don't, because when you start as an immortal born, they're just like, what does that mean? Well, it means one of your parents was a god, and he gave you a magic item, and he'll probably come back at some point and be a dick to you or something, because fuck you.
Right. Okay, so let's get into the actual... character classes of this game. I like this list. I gotta be honest, I really do like this list, because it doesn't have fighter on it. It's just nonsense. It's just bonkers.
It is the weirdest selection of character classes, because there is no generic for anything. Like, normally you go into a thing and you're like, alright, here's a fighter guy. Or if you're in one of these type of, like, everything in the kitchen sink type games, here's a gun guy.
Yeah, some kind of soldier or something. Yeah. Or, yeah, if it's a game that's super broad, you're gonna get super broad categories, like you're a dexterous guy, or you're the smart player.
Yeah, or you get things like, you know, like Rift's rogue scholar, or you're a doctor, or whatever. You have very generic, specific to doing an idea type thing.
Now, Rift's is similar to this. Rift's has a lot of very weird classes that you wouldn't see in other games. You know, like your mind bleeders and your,
Once you get into, like, your 12th book.
The difference is that Rift's has something like 480 OCCs.
Oh, yeah.
This game has 20 classes, and it's fun to see the selection. So, let's go ahead and read them off and discuss them.
All right, so you're going to get an alchemist.
Mm-hmm. That's a gay guy
The alchemist! Yeah.
The alchemists are one of the more powerful things in this backstory of the game.
Mostly because, they know how technology works and they won't tell anyone.
Yeah. That's their big secret. So they have some spells. I think they are...
They're basically tech priests from 40K.
I'm trying to remember if they're full or partial casters, because that's a thing in this game.
I think they're partial. They mostly just learn how to harness, like, starfire.
Right, yeah. Full casters can do more spell casting per day than partial casters. It's just a number of, like, fatigue points that they get that they can use for their spells.
Yeah.
Almost every class, as it gets super high level, gets spells. That's, like, your reward for getting high level in this game.
I think basically all but maybe a 3 or 4 out of the 20 don't have the caveat of if you meet X requirement, then you get to cast spells.
Yeah. Okay, so next up,
we have the Amazon,
which is the aforementioned underboob Wonder Woman.
Yep.
She's not really very Wonder Woman-y, though. If you're, like we said earlier, you can basically divide all these classes up into Justice League members. Amazon is Batman. They are very good for some reason, even though the drawing is of your standard Valhalla-type woman. She literally looks like that. Like, she's got the huge Viking helmet and the spear.
Yeah.
That's not an Amazon, but whatever. Okay, that's fine. What are they good at? Oh, lockpicking.
Yeah, you're a rogue, apparently.
Bypassing doors.
And you'll get spells at random times for no reason?
Yep. Yeah, and then,
After that, we get the Aquarian, which is just Aquaman.
Yeah, or Wondar. Depending on how deep you want that bench to go.
So you get, in addition to your I can swim around and talk to fish and stuff like that, you get sonar and all of that. My favorite thing that they have is oxygen manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either do the, like, I'm underwater with someone and I can give them oxygen. I can do, like, the mermaid kiss.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I'm above water, I can go, hey, I take all the oxygen out of your lungs. Fuck you.
Ha ha. Never had that happen. It sucks.
And it's, it is a save or die that you get at level 1. Like, as a character, you're like, what do you have? Well, one of my innate abilities lets me kill anyone.
Let me, brief aside here, 4 of the stats that you get in this game are surprise A, surprise B, surprise C, and surprise D. They're various percentile tables to indicate your chance of being surprised by things happening.
Now, excuse me, it's actually surprise double A.
Oh, gosh.
And then A and B and C.
I forgot about surprise double A.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's for really small surprises. That's like mosquito bite surprises.
No, those are the super double surprises.
Oh, I was
that's
going by
bra
sizes.
That's an invisible ambush.
Right. Okay, what's next?
The Archer. You are Green Arrow.
You are extremely Green Arrow. Your spells are powered by earth power instead of by, boxing glove arrows, but...
But it's still, I shoot you and knock you out, or I...
Fire a bola at you, or...
Yeah, it's all his trick arrows, but they're magic instead of technology.
Yeah, and that's our first introduction to earth power, which is one of the 3 or 4 different types of magic in this game. You've got basic magic or arcane stuff. You've got earth power.
And you got chi.
You got chi, and then there's also Vendarant and the Labarong, which is the super magic that no one knows how to do.
It's god magic.
It's almost god magic, because there's also
there
god
is
magic.
God magic, but then Vendarant and the Labarong is, like, a step below god magic. It's like demigod magic.
It's like, it's supposed to be kind of like Cthulhu level magic. Like it is. It's a language that no one speaks.
Oh yeah. It is the language of the universe. So it's like you're telling the universe what to do by speaking Vendarant Nalabarong.
Vendarant Nalabarong sounds like, I don't know, a description of an Australian animal. Like, oh, look, it's a Nalabarong.
Ah, he's a real Vendarant one.
See?
Yeah, that Nalabarong. Exactly. I'm gonna get ya. Damn it.
Right?
No, I'm never... I want to see someone with one of those Billabong shirts, but it just says Malabarong. That'd be the deepest of deep cut shirts that no one would ever get. They would just assume it was some surfing thing.
Right, Malabarong. Okay, so moving on past the magic tribes, what's the next race?
We have the chameleon drake.
Okay, chameleon drakes are lizard dudes who can turn themselves into any type of dragon that lives on the planet.
Yeah.
By basically just wanting to. They can kind of slowly change their form. But they don't look like dragons, they look like
Dragon mans.
Dragon. They look like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Dragon Edition.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they are.
They kind of look like the old gargoyles cartoon.
Yeah, fair enough. If they could do the cloak out of wings thing, they would totally look like gargoyles.
Yeah. And then we get dwarfs.
Okay, so dwarves, once again, based entirely on the picture, are weird little bearded dudes with invisible legs.
The picture for this is wonderful. What was supposed to be armor ended up just sort of looking like someone's hollow leg.
Yeah. So the dwarf looks like he's got cool invisible legs. So if you want to play as Phantom Limb, then the dwarves are the class for you. And they also get some... Their special abilities are...
Weird.
Weird. There's a lot of earth power stuff that's like... I don't remember exactly. It's like they can be turned invisible and...
Yeah, but then they also have things like teleporting or invisibility, like your standard dwarf has.
Yeah, so the dwarves are unusual. They're noted in the fluff of the game for being the only race that retained archives, which means they remember times before times.
Yeah, because there was a big plague that made everyone dumb. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean everyone's intelligence was set to at least below 8.
Right. Yeah, like when you're watching a reality show.
Yeah, basically that.
Yeah.
So next we have the giant, which is just a big dude. It kind of looks like Chuck Norris with an axe.
And that's the fighter of the game.
Yeah, his actual, like, your abilities and whatnot, everyone's write-up is the smallest of everyone, and it's just a bunch of background, and then your natural ability is you're tough and you're strong. And you like piloting boats.
And their only, like, natural ability... Oh, they love boats. They love... Yeah. Not only do they love boats, giants are naturally sailors in this game.
Oh, yeah.
But they also are the only ones who have airships.
They're the only ones who do anything with ships, really.
Yeah. Their only ability, beyond just hitting things with axes and stuff, is the natural-born ability to shrink so that they don't have to be giants.
Yeah.
So that they can go into other people's houses.
And they can just go, oh, no, Chuck!
Yeah. Let's go right back up.
Then you got
the gnome.
Yep, gnomes, which are apparently just Lemmy Kilmeister shooting a laser beam.
Yeah, what do you call that? He's defiling a tree. Is that, I want a little context on defiling a tree. He is not putting his wiener in it. He's Dark Sun style defiling that tree. He's pulling the life force out of it to fire a beam of beaminess.
Yeah, beams.
And he's completely in profile.
Oh my god. Yeah, and because gnomes have to be able to talk to fucking badgers, they have that ability.
And then they are also partial earth power casters.
Yeah.
So good for them.
They are pure earth power casters.
Oh, I'm sorry. They're full.
They are all about that shit.
I haven't seen this book in 2 weeks.
Yeah, so then we get the Mage Warrior, which...
I don't remember shit about the Mage Warrior.
The biggest thing the Mage Warrior gets is you're a caster and you get a staff for free.
Well, you need to have a Dr. Fate on your team on your obvious Justice League team, so there you go.
Yeah, then you get Mutant, which is just an X-Man.
Yeah, there's some kind of X-Man. You roll on a set of powers. It's literally the same set of powers from Heroes Unlimited.
Yeah, it's just...
I shouldn't say literally, but it's very close. It's just super speed, invulnerability, wings, and so on.
Yeah, you are just an X-Man.
Then yeah, you get so random ninjas. Powers. You get ninjas. Ninjas are very interesting in this game. They have their whole ecosystem of ninjas that they learn to do with.
They have telepathy, but for other ninja only.
They worship the god of ninjas, whose name is Tuch, like Tuch.
Yeah, I love that. Essentially, going by the fluff, ninjas were created by the Jesus in order to be an adventurer, but they have their own god.
Yeah, and it's Tuch. Tucci? Do you think they worship Stanley Tucci?
Yeah, well, I mean, who doesn't?
I
celebrate his entire oeuvre.
Well, I really like all those ninjas he created.
Dear Stanley Tucci, thanks for all the ninjas, Julie Newmar.
Also, I really liked Big Night.
Okay. Then we get our Psy Elf.
Psy Elves, which are elves with psychic powers.
Mostly it's just, I can create a psychic dagger, or a psychic shield, or a psychic sword.
So they're kind of like Psylocke, but an elf.
but more of an elf.
Yeah, a little more of an elf. Not much, more of an elf. Like, on the elf to Asian scale, they're slid a little further away from Psylocke towards elf.
Which, I mean, that scale is not as big as you would think.
It's a near universal. I mean, we all know the elf to Asian scale.
I'm pretty sure we all had to memorize that in school, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You had to get your metric conversions, and then you had to get your Asian to elf conversions.
Yeah, it's the XY axis, and then the up down one is dwarf to what, Germans?
And then there's the there's the diagram, which is the Scots to dwarves, which is just
a circle.
Just a circle.
It's a Venn diagram, but you'd never tell.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be red and blue, but it's just purple. What is that? How come no one can play a dwarf without giving him a stupid Scottish accent?
Because someone decided years ago to do that, and now it's just a thing.
It's just permanent.
Because have you been to Scotland? Dwarves everywhere.
It's just dwarves.
It's crazy.
It's just axes and mines.
Yeah. Remember when those dwarves tried to vote for their freedom in Faerun?
That poor country with no one who has a visible leg amongst them.
Okay.
All right. So,
Then we get Shadow Masters and Shadow Warriors. Our various Shadow Folk.
And, Shadow, they're two different things. Shadow Masters are like
casteries.
Caster wizard dudes. And then Shadow Warriors were created. Is that, am I right? Are they correct?
No.
I'm thinking of something else. Yeah. Forget I said anything. Go ahead.
No, the Shadow Warriors are just this sort of the difference between being like, I'm a wizard and I'm a mage warrior.
Right,
which
okay.
Which is actually a different class that doesn't have anything to do with fighting, but...
Don't worry, that'll come up again in a couple pages.
Yeah. So then we have our shaman, which is just...
Indians.
Before we get into that...
Sure.
It's not just, oh yeah, these guys are totally Indians. To read from the book, as a race, the shamans are North American Indians. Although not all tribal shamans are Indians. What?
So they're Indians, but some of them aren't Indians.
Yeah, it's, as a race, they are Indians, although not all shamans are Indians.
Just to reiterate, the first thing that happens to Cinnabar after he teleports people to it is that some mutant goes crazy and activates an engine that detonates, that kills most of them.
Yeah, a crap load of radiation spills out.
Kills almost everybody. These survivors are 1,500 of the people who live on Earth. 1,500 survive. I don't think there's 1,500 Native Americans left that are pureblood. and you're telling me that they managed to repopulate into a pureblood race again? Were there like two? Man, they must be dumb as hell, and I feel bad. I'm not saying that. I just mean they must look like British royalty at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have to imagine going from 1,500 people up to 6 billion and then down to like 200,000. Everyone on this planet, the whole like, oh, it was the Dark Age, it was a plague. I'm like, no, that's genetics. You all inbred so much, you are just pants on head stupid, lot of you.
I'd say 3 out of 4 of them are probably born with, like, liquid bones.
Okay, so we get our golden/scarlet tigers, which are...
martial artists?
Just ninjas that can shoot chi fire.
They all have to wear Batman cowls.
Yeah, so does the mage tiger.
Which is just a wizard one of them.
Also, so you know, the tigers aren't actually tiger men. The panther man is a panther man, and the Batman is a bat that is also a man.
Mm-hmm.
The tiger is, however, just a dude.
Yeah, it's a dude literally wearing a Batman cowl. And, like, a ninja garb. They look like... Yeah,
The picture for the mage tiger literally looks like Feldian.
It's gotta be a trace. Look at the belts!
He's got belts and pouches, he's got a spawn cape and a Batman cowl, and he's doing a Doctor Strange, spell cast. It is amazing.
It's like an amalgamation. Also, when you look at the belts all over him, think Cyclops, because that's Cyclops' belts.
He stole Cyclops' belts.
It's Spawn stole Batman's helmet and Cyclops' belts and started casting Dr. Fate's little onk bolts. That's what a mage tiger is, except not really. Really, they get none of the good stuff from regular tigers, which means they're crappy martial artists. And then to replace that, they're also crappy wizards.
Yep. You get the crap from everything. Hooray!
Okay, next we come to one of my favorites.
The Wereman.
Okay, where... I don't think he knows what it means.
No. Raven C.S. McCracken has no idea what the prefix where is actually supposed to mean, because it shows up everywhere.
Yeah. So, in the beginning of the book, it's described how the god Aridius sent, or his avatar, sent Earth or Mars or Cinnabar hurtling through space to get to Shalom, and he protects it by summoning a werestorm.
Yeah, it's a storm that is only a storm
on full moons.
Full moons are there.
Normally, it's a man.
Yeah,
a vaguely stormy-looking man. It looks like Bluto from Popeye, and then he turns into a big storm.
And then there are the were men, which, if you know what were is supposed to be in werewolf, it literally means a man wolf. That's what the were prefix is talking about, being a man. So this is a man-man.
It's a man-man.
And which is fine. The were-man is the only one where you might say it makes sense because they were created. So they're, like, we are man-human-man.
Yeah, alchemists made these guys as their bodyguards. And their power set mostly comprises of surrounding themselves with sheaths of energy.
Yeah, they have an absorption field, and it's great. Everyone loves it.
And they can, and their sheaths of energy, because this book is 80s power mullet super excess, is described as pitch black, but you can see them through it. Ah, yes, yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then next up, we come to our favorite.
Absolutely my favorite in the book. The Winged Warriors.
Oh, the Winged Warriors.
Because if you have a Justice League, you need a Hawkman.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, so Winged Warriors are, extra muscly naked dudes with wings.
Yeah, they're, like, weirdly, resistant to damage. They've got some tenths, which we'll get into.
We'll talk about tenths in a second, because, oh lord, do I ever want to talk about tenths.
But yeah, they've got special abilities and wings and all that.
One of my favorite things to get into is right here. One of the things about this book that led me to my conclusion that he never stopped typing under any circumstances is a brief part of the description of Winged Warriors. Let me just give it to you right here. Winged Warriors are the performing artists of Cinnabar. Okay, before I keep going, let's point out they are also winged warriors. They're all really muscly, they all fight with bladed wings, and they're adventurers. And there's not very many of them, because there's only a set number of adventurers that live on Cinnabar.
There's 600 adventurers.
They were created by Aridius, or his avatar, to guard Cinnabar.
Just say Jesus, it's easier.
Okay, space Jesus, fine. I like the word Aridius. Anyway, so of the 600 divided into 20 classes, there's 30 of these guys, that's what that means, unless those numbers fluctuate.
Oh, yeah.
There's roughly 30 of these guys. Winged Warriors are the performing artists of Cinnabar. Twice monthly, opposite the Dalhada concerts, the professional troupe of actors called Live Emotion perform comedies and dramas. However, okay, there's a dark side to this
caveat.
However, they do not perform musicals, because most Winged Warriors, out of the 30 of them, have poor singing voices and even worse rhythm.
Yeah. So they can't jump.
So I guess they're flying white people.
Yeah.
They're really good at improv troops.
Yeah. Ah, coming up, the Winged Warriors group Assaulted Nuts doing improv. Hey, can I get a suggestion for where we are right now?
The Forbidden Island continent.
I heard Terra City. All right, we're going to go with that.
What about a job option?
Alchemist.
Dwarf.
I heard Scarlet Tiger. Okay, Scarlet Tiger in Terra City. It might go a little bit something like this.
God, how do they get Live Emotion? Live Emotion sounds like the name of a J-pop song that was attached to Gundam Wing.
Yeah, no, Live Emotion is definitely something I have danced to in Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah. Live Emotion comes with glow sticks. There's these 30 of these guys, and just, once again, these are angels. They have wings under their arms, so they're closer to the Silverhawks than they are to regular angels. And, wow, that was a deep pull.
The other thing. So not only are they just, like, we're the improv group of Cinnabar, but they're obsessed with hunting.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. It's acting and hunting.
And they go hunting for storm drakes, which is just one of the many kinds of dragons that you find around Cinnabar.
Yeah, which is weird, because there are actually dragons, and they're different from drakes, except he switched them for no reason. Drakes are the giant big dragons, and dragons are small little drake things.
Right, and then there's also hydras, which are actually hydras.
Which are, you know, hydras.
Yeah, we all know what hydras
are. Yeah, who doesn't know a good hydra?
Yeah, hydra is a little, near-microscopic, cnidarian-type animal that lives on ferns and underwater reefs and pulls in other smaller plankton through its mouth, right? Yeah. We all know what hydra is.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. So after that...
That's all 20.
Yeah, that's all of it.
Oh, now, just real quick, one of the ways you can create a class in this game, if you want to play a specific character type, is you can be one who was raised in another one's guild. It's a way to get a different set of skills for your class. So that means that you can play as a dwarf who is not a dwarf, but was actually born a tiger, but was raised dwarf. But is a dwarf now, because dwarf isn't a race, it's a guild.
Yeah, there's a dwarf guild, and they'll teach you to be dwarfy, by God.
Even if you're a giant, they'll teach you to be a dwarf.
I'll teach your grandmother to suck eggs. I told you I'd shoot. Why didn't you believe me? So, yeah. Oh, and we skipped over the Biosynthesiborg.
How did we do that? The Biosynthesiborg is one of the best because of that name.
Yeah, and you also needed to roll 3 natural 20s on your skills, on your stats, in order to be one.
But if you are, then it was worth it, because you're Cyborg from Justice League, and you get to have all kinds of cool missiles coming out of you, and you get to fly on hover jet
ridiculously
super feet.
Durable and strong.
Yeah, they're amazing, and they come in 4 varieties that do different types of things, and then there's a super variety that does all 4 of those things, but is irredeemably evil.
Ooh, yeah. So, so after you've done that, now you have to get your skills. And the skills, I've had many a review on here where skills have pissed me off because there have been like 40 or 50 of them.
And there's too many. That's
I'm like, this is so dumb.
Yeah.
No one needs that many skills.
Palladium has that problem where, you know, you have basic math and advanced math and 6 kinds of pilot, but
right here, the complete skill list goes to 192 skills. What the fuck?
Yeah. And if you're thinking, oh, well, that's probably okay. Maybe the characters are very broad and they have a lot of these skills. Okay, first of all, no. And second of all, wouldn't that be worse? Like,
yeah.
I don't want to write that down.
No, I don't need to know if my guy has fucking, like, brewer or carpentry or glass blowing. Or cinematography.
Look at the piloting section. The piloting section is gonna be 15 by itself.
Yeah, and I like that they assume submarines are gonna be so prevalent that piloting submarine is its own skill.
It's real hard to tell what's gonna be prevalent in this universe because, it's had a big Dark Ages, and some of the population has recovered. A lot of people seem to be running around with swords and shields and chainmail, but at the same time, there's like ultra spaceships piloted by super police from space, And a lot of people are carrying around power shields. It's a very mishmashy tech level.
You have some people who are like, I have no idea what technology is. I run around with a sword and I try to stab things. And other people are walking around in full suits of power armor shooting giant missiles.
Yeah. I mean, that's, again, like I keep saying it, this guy had to have done some Palladium gaming.
Oh, yeah. This guy, if he did not play Rifts before this, I would be absolutely amazed.
I would eat my hat.
Yeah, I would also eat his hat.
I would buy a hat for John to eat if this guy didn't play some riffs.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a million skills. And
then after that, in case the 192 skills was enough, he gives another like 50 hobby skills that you could have.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to have golfing or interior design or kite flying.
I think yo-yo throwing was my favorite of them.
Yeah, crocheting also in there. All of these and more
could
be yours.
This is an unnecessary list. And I don't want to accuse this book of being, I mean, it's like 400 pages of book, but that list doesn't need to exist. You could just be pick a hobby and don't keep skipping because this is one of my favorite sections right here. Right here we see a list of the types of creatures you could play as.
Yeah, these are the variant races that we had mentioned before.
Except there's not as much description as you might want. It's just a single paragraph and the skill levels that they get and the stuff they start with. And let's just pick one and tell you about the stuff it starts with because that's always kind of fun.
All right, so let's say you really want to be a tree demon.
Why not?
You've always dreamed of, I don't know.
Don't worry, they're neither tree nor demon. They're just weird little Ewok-y things that live near trees.
Yeah, so great. You have resistances to earth power, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You get some skill points per level. You get some starting skills, so you have skills in sniping and infiltration and ambush and concealment, because apparently you're a fucking assassin as a tree demon.
Hell yeah.
And then you get 1/10 of damage protection.
Ooh, you want to do that now?
Ooh. Oh, fine, let's talk about tents.
All right, so...
Okay, this is the worst fucking system that has ever existed.
Hey, remember MDC?
Yeah. Do you remember the good old halcyon days of MDC?
Okay, MDC is not a very good system. I think we can agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. It's an interesting system. It's easy to rationalize and to explain. But, you know, it's just not a very good set of rules, because it just basically means some things are completely invincible to some other things, and it basically means you have 2 games you could be playing.
Yeah.
This game uses tenths. Now, a single tenth reduces damage that you take from a variety of sources, but not all sources.
By a tenth.
By 90%.
Well, no, by it takes it cuts, a tenth.
It divides it by 10.
A tenth place, basically. A tens place gets moved. You move a decimal over.
Yeah. So if you were to take 10 damage and you have 1/10 of protection, you would take 1 damage.
Hooray!
If you have 2/10 of protection, then you take 1/100 the damage you would have taken for something.
Yeah.
You can get up to 4/10
of in magic one thing.
Yeah, one thing. Another thing, I think it's just physical tenths.
Well, there's personal tenths. So if I'm, say, Aquaman, and I start with a tenth of damage protection, and I can roll up extras, and I get to 4/10 damage protection.
You're taking 1 point of damage per every 1,000 damage you take.
No, for every 10,000.
10,000 damage.
10,000 points of damage gives 1 damage point to me. Mm-hmm. Great. Now if I put on a suit of armor with 4/10 of damage protection, I now have 8/10 of damage protection.
You take 1 damage for every 10 million.
Yeah, every 10 million damage does 1 point, which seems like it would be kind of insane.
Well, what about magic damage?
No, stops nothing. Tenths are, unless they specifically say this stops magic damage, do nothing against magic. And you start out as a character with, like, upwards of, if you're hitting the ceiling of starting health, you're probably going to be topping out at 1,000 hit points.
Yes.
A decent weapon?
Could do, like, up to about 1,800 or so, like a starting sword or something.
Yeah. Well, depending on your strength, or if you manage to just roll really well for your starting wealth, and you just buy a really good, like, blaster or whatever, you could probably just, if they didn't have tenths of damage protection, instantly kill basically anyone.
Yeah, or be killed yourself instantly. A lot of the classes start with multiple tenths. Winged warriors, for example, start with 2/10 of damage protection.
Yeah, they're just really durable.
Yeah,
because
heavy durability, whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah, so that's a thing. There are, that's tenths. Tenths are super fun. They lead to the fact that there's no weapons in this game that do, like, any number that doesn't end in 2 zeros of damage.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
nothing
literally
does 7 damage.
No, the lowest damage anything does in this book is at least 100.
Yeah. So, why they don't just knock those zeros off, I don't, it's because it's not cool.
No, because then he came up with this tenth system, and he needed to keep writing.
Yeah.
So obviously.
Just don't stop. Keep writing. Clack, click, 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 click.
Yeah. So, it's dumb and bad. And
yeah.
I should feel bad.
I'm pretty sure the paperclip was trying to tell him that in Lotus 123 or whatever he was writing this on in 1988. So. So yeah, there's a little paperclip popping up that was like, "You appear to be completely insane. Do you
want to not write tenths? Did you mean 10 damage? No, I meant 1,000, and you can cut it with tenths.
I want to make it so that each section of weapons has 5 weapons in it, and then each one of them goes up by a full magnitude of damage. So there's a good gun, and an insane gun, and a space gun, and an ultra space gun, instead of 2 choices.
Oh yeah, because you'll be looking at something and you go like, all right, what is the damage on this gun? Well, it's a laser blaster. It's a super high-tech weapon. It can do 1,000 to 10,000 damage.
That's the notation in this game, by the way. He doesn't mention the dice and,
no,
and math.
It's
just
you figure it
you
out.
You work it out. It's AD&D first edition rules.
Yeah. So it's basically a D10 times 1,000.
Yes, it is.
So there you go. And then if you want to go, okay, you know what? I managed to roll, like, 3 million as my starting money because I rolled really well. I'm going to go ahead and get a laser impact sonic rifle that does 100,000 to 400,000 damage.
Okay.
Why not?
So 1d4 times 100,000
yeah.
damage.
Yep.
That's kind of, what's the word I'm looking for here? It's kind of swingy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Your high roll does 300,000 damage more than your low roll.
And it's one of those things where, unless you are specifically fighting someone that's like, yeah, I had 5/10 of damage protection, then you're like, hey man, you're dead. Like, real, real dead.
Don't worry about if that's unfair or not. A lot of this game that we don't want to talk about on mic because it's boring is power draw and weight limits and all that kind of shenanigans. Literally, if there's a rule you've ever heard of in any role-playing game ever, it's in here. Like, I don't want to go through the details too much, but to roll to hit something, you roll percentile. There are 4 kinds of crits you could potentially roll on that percentile.
Oh yeah. When you're rolling to hit someone, we also have a roll to hit, like, hit location table.
Yeah.
There's a dodge percentage table. If you fuck up your dodge, there's a fate roll.
Yeah.
To see if you don't fuck up the dodge again.
Yeah.
And then if you fuck that up, there's a god roll.
Yeah. I don't.
Literally, every rule you've ever heard of in a role playing game is in here. If it adds complexity, it's in here.
There's hardness values for your weapon, and it might let you cut through tenths of damage protection.
There's life points attached to your armor, so that you slowly degrade your tenths.
Yeah, you have to get your armor repaired because if it takes like. It has 100,000 life points, and if you took 50,000 damage on your armor, then you have to repair the 50,000 of it to get back.
There's mana and fatigue and memorized spells. Everything. Every rule you've ever heard of is in here.
Yeah.
It's insane. And it's really fun. We're gonna probably run out of time because we're like less than halfway through the book. We put post-it notes in here about stuff we wanted to talk about, and I think we've gone through 4 of the 15 or so of them.
Yeah, out of 400 pages, just to let you know, everything we've talked about fits in the first 100.
Yeah. So, we're almost definitely gonna have to do a second episode of this. Okay, so yeah, every rule you've ever heard of, John's reaching for a card, so I'm gonna let him talk.
So, in addition to all of this, you're like, alright, look. You're an adventurer on Cinnabar. That's your thing. Maybe you go through these various continents. Maybe you do whatever. Maybe you manage to talk some alchemist into giving you a fucking, like, power armor. Or maybe you just are a giant with a 700 strength and you swing an axe. All right. Great. Love it. You can go to all of these different places. But then there is an entire section of this book for starship creation.
Oh, yeah. No, I really wanted to talk about this, too. The chapters of this book might as well be like different books. Like you'll be finishing reading the section about what types of precious metals there are that you could get. Next page, starship creation. 3 pages later, types of fish.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And to make a starship, you just follow these 11 easy steps. And there are a bunch of approximate sizes. It gives you the volume of the ship in square feet. Gives you a payload. How good your dodge can be in a ship. Okay, of these things, but that I don't really care about, whatever. But the whole point of this game is you're supposed to be playing on Cinnabar, and it gives you the option to just go, you know what, fuck this planet, I'm leaving.
Yeah, although it does mention that there's like 5 alien races that are routinely attacking Cinnabar, and that you can go out and interact with them in space, and there's like space stations near Cinnabar and other planets, and whether or not those planets are inhabited. So it really is kind of a game where, like, I want to put this out there because it's if you look at the very front of the book, literally the cover, it actually calls itself the single book system.
Oh yeah, no, that's the reason this is 400 pages is he literally tried to put everything you could possibly need in here.
Yeah, it's not much of a business model, but damn, did he ever try.
And the weird thing to me is it's also a game where you have levels, but there is no end. Like, D&D, you hit level 20 or 30, depending on edition, and you're done. Like, maybe they put out a book that's like, here's epic levels and here's 10 more. This doesn't have that.
You just
level forever until you're done with the game.
Well, no, actually, you can become a god.
That's the big thing is they go, you'll eventually, once you get past like
level 50 or
basically
something,
50th level, like, you're probably powerful enough that you should stop worrying about adventuring and be a god or something.
And then there's a whole bunch of rules for that. There's a whole chapter on what happens when you get too high level. A god reaches out to you, or you try to reach out to a god, but you can only ever try once, because if you try more than once, you evaporate on the spot. But if you reach out to a god and are successful, then they give you an insane quest. If you can complete the quest, then they reward you with godhood. If you can't complete the quest, then they give you another quest.
Which is the weirdest thing to me, because the entire beginning part of this book is like, yeah, they're all of the gods were fighting, and all of them got stuck in, like,
Shadarkim, the dark dimension.
So they're stuck in Shadarkim because the time god was on the side of evil, so they had to, like, stop all time for them.
Uh-huh.
So that wouldn't happen. So essentially, they got fucking time warred, and they don't exist in the universe anymore.
Yeah, but it's easy to make new gods. Well, that's just because there's a power vacuum. And again, it's because you're playing demigods and not real gods. That's the difference.
Except it keeps talking about like, oh yeah, and then gods will do things. And I'm like, what fucking gods?
Oh yeah, well okay, fair enough. Although it has been 50,000 years, so if those demigods haven't gotten their shit together and gotten up that ladder a little bit, then I don't know what to tell you. But again, that's just another chapter in this book. What to do if you're a god? That's just,
yeah.
This book really, it calls itself the single book system, and goddamn, it is.
There's, flipping to this, there's an entire section just on reactions to getting hirelings.
Oh yeah, now this was like reading second edition D&D.
Oh yeah, this is old school D&D where they're like, yeah man, you're gonna get some hireling to come with you. I'm like, really?
Yeah,
and I'm a fucking giant in power armor, what guy am I hiring?
Well, I don't know, but first we have to roll to see if he hates you.
Yeah.
Because that's what the reactions are. Literally, straight out of old monster manuals, the you encounter something, what is its reaction to you? Is it neutral? Ambivalent?
Yeah, it goes from will probably hate you and will attempt to harm you up to will die for you and works for free.
I love that that's a random roll you can get on the chart. Like, you just...
Oh, yeah, you go into some, like, hirelings are us, and you're like, I want that guy.
I love you!
He's just like, oh my god, I love you!
The master!
Ah! And then, like, you go, also, let me pick up that guy. He's like, how about you go fuck yourself?
Oh man, you hire me and I will slit your throat at night. I'm a hireling.
Oh, we didn't even mention it. In character creation, there is a point where, because you're rolling randomly for literally everything, your age, your physical appearance, which affects your reaction rolls.
Yeah.
And Amazons get a 30% better chance of being pretty.
Yes. Well, although there's an in-game reason for it, because Amazons have the power to control their pregnancies. It's in their fluff description. They can control their pregnancies to the point where they can pick gender, hair color.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, Amazons have a way to shut that whole thing down.
Yeah. If an ugly kid's in there, they have a way to shut that whole thing down. If it's an illegitimate ugly kid.
You see... Cinnabar is actually about ethics and games journalism.
Why?
So, in addition to that, you have to roll randomly for your personality. You don't get to decide if people like you or not. You roll randomly, and you have an ego stat,
mm-hmm.
and it's how powerful is your personality, and then you roll randomly to see if it's annoying or nice.
I'm an intelligent weapon from 2nd edition Dungeons & Dragons. What's my ego score?
Oh, you find out your ego, and it's like, all right, what is your adjustment? Your adjustment is 6, and then you roll for your personality to see if it's +6 or -6.
Right, so are you choleric or temperamental?
Yeah, so it's just, are you a super cool guy, or are you a total D-bag?
Well, I rolled this table, it says I'm that one guy that brings a guitar to the party.
Oh, I'm sorry, not only are you a negative, but you're a -2 on top of that. Yeah. And so there's an entire section here of just like, does he, auras. Auras! We didn't mention auras! Right. Jesus Christ!
This game has auras. Literally every rule you've ever heard of is in this book.
It's your alignment system, and it's an aura.
Right. And people can see your aura and read it, and they come in colors, and the colors tell you if you're good or bad.
Except if you're a were-man. No one gets to know what a were-man's aura is.
Because they have mastery of sheaths of energy around themselves, and what else is an aura, really, when you get down to it?
Yep. So, you can be, like, gold or silver or blue, and then you're a good guy.
Rainbow.
You could be...
You can't actually be rainbow.
Like, a scarlet, and then you're a total dick to everyone.
That's what the golden scarlet tigers are.
Oh, yeah, the reason they are golden scarlet tigers is because you have to be gold or scarlet.
And the reason that they aren't bronze tiger is because they would have been sued.
Yeah, because then they would have fought Green Arrow, and it would have been sad for everyone.
I mean, literally, they're martial arts wearing half masks. They are a bronze tiger. They just have a different name.
Yeah. So, okay. So there's reaction adjustments for if someone has the same aura as you, even if they don't know what your aura is, because apparently your auras are all complementary?
That's weird. I always hate that other guy at the party who brought a guitar. He's nowhere near as good at playing old Bob Marley in Time of Your Life as I am.
Oh, man, when I do Wonderwall, that guy is such a douche about it. Yeah, so you get that, and you got animal reactions so that you can be like, hey, an animal reacts to me randomly. What does it do?
It shoots lasers out of its eyes at you and flies away because it's one of this world's bears.
Okay, so the bear that flies and shoots laser beams is famous in this game. The other one that I love, though, is there's the sea polar bear, which instead of flying and shooting laser beams, can turn invisible and has a telekinetic bear hug.
Yeah, it can bear hug you from far away. It is one of those glitch throws from Street Fighter 2. Oh, dear Lord. So, this book's very scattershot. Literally anything you want, you'll find it in here. The map is amazing.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten into the geography of this.
Well, why not? Let's wrap up today on the geography of Cinnabar.
So, Cinnabar has three, four main continents.
It also has an inside and an outside, because it's a hollow planet.
Yeah, so, most of the world is taken up by water, which, when Space Jesus decided to turn Mars into a ship, he brought a lot of water with him.
Yeah, because it's way bigger than our oceans.
Because not only is the entire outside in water, the entire inside has its own oceans as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of water. There are three major continents. Most people are going to be playing on the Enchanted Continent, I think. Is that right? Or is it
Yeah, so you've got the Enchanted Continent. Most people are there.
Yeah.
You've got your Dark Continent, which is where all of the racist stereotypes of people are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's absolutely what it is.
They're on the Dark Continent.
Yeah, it's just constant zippity-doo-dah coming from there. just a low tone of it. Actually, one of the two, the other two continents are the Dark Continent.
Yeah, the Dark Continent is the no magic here continent.
Yeah, so no magic works on the Dark Continent. And then the Forbidden Continent, where no technology works. Or is it just nothing works?
No. Actually, the Dark Continent, no magic or technology works.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
Forbidden Continent. It is straight up fuck you, and I don't care what you have.
The Forbidden Continent is just crazy secret stuff happening, but the Dark Continent is nothing works. Like, you can only use your fifth level abilities and lower.
It's weird because it has this entire thing like, yeah, in the Dark Continent, you can only use low-level spells, but it'll keep your spell, like, caster level, but you can only cast low-level spells,
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So you can go, if you're a Biosyntha Cyborg, all of your stuff stops working, so mm-hmm. you're basically just a shitty dude. And you can only fly if you have wings, so, like, a winged warrior can still fly, but if you had a fly spell, you can't use it.
Right, and if you try to teleport, then there's a 90% chance of you disappearing forever.
Yeah, and if you have a spaceship and you even fly above it
in orbit?
Yeah, in the atmosphere or above, you just lose the ability to fly.
Yeah, you just fall out of space. So it's mostly a giant continent covered in crashed spaceships and the corpses of adventurers who thought it'd be fun to go there because they figure everything's going to be low level, because monsters are immune to this low level shenanigans.
So the Dark Continent is inhabited by almost every nasty monster that exists on Cinnabar. Also, these monsters seem unaffected by the Dark Continent's inhibiting or nullifying effects.
So there's no good reason to go there. It's just, out of the three continents in this game you might go to, I guess the Antarctic counts, although it's just described as a bunch of cold, hard-to-get-to mountains, and the hole to the center of the Earth. The butthole of the planet is
the Antarctic is the journey to the center of the Earth.
Yeah, it's got the butthole that takes you in. The moist, welcoming butthole. But the Dark Continent is useless. It was like he was like, oh man, I gotta keep writing this, but my hand must be cramping up. What's the Dark Continent do? Nothing. No one can go there. It's impossible. It's way too dangerous. The monsters will just kill you if you go there. Go. Next.
It is straight up hard mode.
Yeah.
It is, what happens if you go to the Dark Continent? Everything you have stops working, and everything else is still the same. Go.
It's like when you try and fight those last secret bosses in a Final Fantasy game.
It is straight up doing a raid boss in greens.
Yeah, that's you're trying to get an achievement.
Yeah, this is hard mode.
Yeah, so, okay. We gotta wrap up.
There's more to say about geography. We'll get into it next time.
Are you happy so far?
This book, I can't stop ranting at people about this book. Every time for the past 2 weeks when someone has been like, hey, what's the next podcast being about? I have yelled at them for a good 20 minutes about how insane this is.
It's a work of art. It belongs in a museum.
You belong in a museum.
Well, that's also true because, you know, there's got to be a world's largest penis museum somewhere.
Why would that be an entire museum?
Oh, because, you know, it's not going to fit in the wing of another museum. Phew, saved.
Oh, good job.
That was close.
Yeah, all right. Thanks. Okay. We've been live emotion. Thanks for watching.
All right, so tune in a week or two whenever we get together and record this again. I think we'll probably try to get this one done sooner because we have read the book. Well, while it's fresh in our mind, we'll try and get it done sooner. But tune in soon for Cinnabar Episode 2.
The thrilling conclusion.
Where you'll finally learn the secret answer of whether or not we would play this game. In the meantime, you can always find us at Cinnabar.
Cinnabar!
You can find us on Cinnabar. Watching live emotion shows. You can find us at SystemMasteryPodcast.com, System Mastery on Facebook or Twitter. You can email us at Gmail. SystemMastery@gmail.com, that is.
or Cinnabar Mastery on Twitter. Cinnabar Mastery.
No one could master Cinnabar. You can't hold all this in your head. It'll activate the lament configuration and bring Pinhead out.
That is what he meant when he said he had such things to show you. Yeah, and then he just opened up Cinnabar.
Look at this stuff.
Jesus wept and then turned Mars into a planet that was a spaceship.
Oh, man, that makes me think that, like, Lawrence Fishburne, when what's his name, was yelling, "Do you see?" at him at the end of Event Horizon. He was, like, holding Cinnabar in front of him. "Do you see? Look at this raccoon. He's got a bazooka. Do you see?" "I can't tell if this guy's wearing a loincloth or if he just has loincloth-shaped pubes. Do you see?" Okay. So that's where you can find us. As always, feel free to leave a comment in the comment section below. This was a recommendation. Not only was this book a recommendation, it's a loan. So we want to send a special thank you to our friend Ryan for loaning us this book. You can get it from us at the local mental institution where we will be. I'm planning to go with constantly clutching rosaries. I don't know what John's specific insanity is going to be.
I'm probably going to be rocking back and forth talking about all of the various tents that I have.
There it is. And we'll see you later. Good night.